Ladies and gentlemen, the 2026 NFL Draft is officially in the rear view, and we have lots to talk about on today's episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my good friend and co-host Tyler O. And today we just have a lot to go over. There's so much to unpack with all of these college prospects now finding their professional homes. What we're going to do about it in terms of dynasty rookie drafts, maybe look a little bit ahead to, you know, some redraft stuff if we're thinking, you know, we want to get a little spicy with that stuff. And then also some risers and fallers. There are definitely some players that maybe we expected to go a little bit sooner that fell pretty far in the draft and vice versa. So we've got a lot to go over. So let's not waste any time. Tyler, I want to hear from you just baseline. Overall, what is your vibe about how the draft went, and what are some of your kind of overarching takeaways for how people can approach this class now that we have all of the information we've been waiting for?
You know, this was a class that a lot of folks were not excited about, okay? And while I was willing to admit that it was certainly not a great class, I was like, maybe we're wrong. You know, we've been wrong before. A lot of people have opinions on how good a player is going to be or a draft class is going to be. And we get 2 or 3 years down the road, they're proven wrong one way or another. But man, is a class that I think was, let's say, not good. Average at best, let's say. And many folks would disagree with that. Average at best. The landing spots were atrocious. The landing spots, I thought, like, there's a couple that stand out and we'll talk about them. But, like, generally speaking, you know, like Ty Simpson was always going to be like, you know, a first round or high pick, like goes to a spot where he's not going to see the field. Like we probably have one rookie quarterback with realistically going to be seeing the field in week one. There's a couple opportunities out there, but that's like uncommon, right? Running backs, 3 running backs on day 1 and 2, 1 running back on day 2. Like that's tough. We don't have a lot to work with there. It's not, you know, day 3 is not a death sentence, but not good. And wide receiver all over the place. Same with tight end. Like there were some wide receivers I really liked, and there were some tight ends I really liked, but the landing spots didn't necessarily add up, and some tight ends that I was a fan of went really late. And there's a shift with how the NFL is kind of looking at tight ends right now. And I'm sure we'll get into that. This is the intro, but overall, man, I was willing to give this class a shot, but the draft really didn't do it any favors. That would be how I would summarize my take.
I mean, I tend to agree with basically everything you said. I was really hoping that we were going to get a few more running backs going a little bit early. I thought maybe some of these receivers that ended up going super late were going to go a little bit higher as well. But, you know, the NFL tells us how they feel. You know, it was very bizarre to watch. But at the same time, you know, kind of like you were getting at, a lot of people have been saying for a while, like, this class is pretty good, but I don't know. There are a lot of question marks. And watching that play out definitely. It makes me really curious what options people have if they have a ton of rookie picks and they don't really know what to do with that capital. I guess I'm curious what sort of movability, I guess, how easily do you think people are going to be able to get out of making picks in these rookie drafts if they want to just, you know, collect some talent elsewhere?
It's not going to be an easy thing to do, Herms. More than likely, if you're playing in a league with anyone who's plugged into anything, you're not going to be able to move these picks for much. I don't think, yeah, I mean, everyone's going to tell you, like, yeah, trade your 2026 picks or 27 or trade them for vets. And I certainly think it's worth trying. But I think it's very well known at this point in time that everyone wants out of this draft class. There's not a market for trading out of this draft class right now. So go ahead and try your best. Try to get out of things. Try to shift, make some moves, get creative. Certainly nothing wrong with that. But I also just want to recognize, like, hey, I've always been a huge proponent of, like, your draft picks will only gain value as we approach the rookie draft and as you become on the clock. And that's never really been wrong, in my opinion. And this is the first year when it's kind of trending that way. So it's very unique. I'm a little concerned. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you got the picks, you've held on to him for so long. You traded for him in the season. You stick and pick. That's probably your best bet here. By certain, go try. But that's where I'm at in terms of these picks is you're likely sticking and picking because, yeah, I'm not moving like a 110 for a second round pick in 27. You're not going to get, I don't even think you're going to be able to get a 27 pick for like a mid first, which typically is something you'd be able to do. So sticking and picking is likely what you're going to do unless you got a draft full of dynasty players who aren't plugged in, which is, in my opinion, very rare.
So let's say folks are in this position because it's true of a lot of us. If you are sticking and picking, there were at least a handful of players that went to some pretty cool spots. There are some highlights worth focusing on. Are there any in particular, whether it's, you know, just some of these guys that are going to be in the first rounds or even, you know, second, third rounds of rookie drafts that you look at and you think, well, even though this class is a little bit meh, this guy in this spot, I am absolutely down.
So some later guys, like some guys that I think I have some interest in, the guy that moved the most for me is going to be Antonio Williams, Clemson wide receiver who went to the Commanders. I would tell you right now, this was not a player that I was excited about in terms of like my rankings and how I was evaluating. Just give me a moment here. Like I'm literally over here kind of trying to figure out like, what did I say about him? But he moved up the most. When I say, hey, like who is the player that moved the most during this process? Who is the player that moved up my rankings the most across all positions? It is without a doubt going to be Antonio Williams in this one. So he's going to move up to a spot. I believe I have him at wide receiver. Let me just find real quick. I moved him up to wide receiver 6. He was down at wide receiver 12. I moved him ahead of Denzel Boston in this case. Ahead of Elijah Girard, Lane, Jeremy Bernard. Yeah, I mean, I had him pretty far down there, but he's moved up. I mean, I think he's the things I liked about him. He's tough. He's reliable. He's comfortable in traffic. You know, he finds the windows naturally. I think he can track the deep ball better than people can think, but obviously, the frame and durability are a bit of a concern and truly lacks that second gear to threaten vertically. But when you kind of look at it from where he fits with the Commanders, one, we know the Commanders need some help, right? They need some wide receiver help outside of Terry, and he fits Terry's game really well. Okay. He's got the return game experience. He probably gets on the field. So I moved him up a lot. He's kind of a guy that I'm a lot more interested than I was. Again, the biggest mover from the draft. Like the profile wasn't necessarily something that I was thrilled about, but I can see, you know, the draft capital there, that's going to be like a big piece of this. Like it came off the board early, in round 3, day 2, and then the opportunity with what I consider a very good quarterback, if not elite, in Jaden Daniels. The draft capital is there, the landing spot's there, and frankly, he was a pretty high prospect coming into college too. It just didn't all work out. I mean, Clemson's where high prospects go to die, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the ones that stuck out to me the most terms. It was like a player that I just saw move that is now like a guy that I think you consider at the end of the first. Because that, to me, like, I want to hear your thoughts on Antonio Williams, but like, to me, the biggest question I had when doing my ranks is like, who's the 112, right? That I have like 11 guys in the first and the 112 is position. Yeah. So I guess like you take it either way, Herms. Like if you have Antonio Williams thoughts you'd like to add, but like to me, Who's the 112? Who do you take at 112 if you have the 112? That to me is the hardest choice I've made.
Well, just quickly on Antonio Williams, I was listening to NFL radio, shout out SiriusXM, however long ago when the Commanders were still in the process of replacing Cliff Kingsbury. And I had heard them talk about, you know, David Blau, you know, former quarterback in the NFL. He is stepping up. He is taking the mantle as the offensive coordinator in DC. And because he was on the coaching staff, there are a lot of people who kind of think they're going to keep some of the, you know, similar offensive, you know, properties and different things that they would be, you know, doing before. And I think about the type of player that Williams is, and I think about the fact that Deebo Samuel departed this offseason. He is still floating out there in free agency. And Williams is a pretty solid player that I think can really attack horizontally and do a bunch of different things for them and move around. And I think that was a very good pick on their part. He is somebody that I kind of had my eye on a little bit, hoping that he was going to end up getting some draft capital that would be appealing, but I didn't think it was going to be nearly this high. But in terms of who I take at the 112, I think he's certainly in the conversation for sure. But I went ahead and, you know, did my whole rookie rankings reshuffle post-draft and everything. And just looking at the way I have it, you know, kind of sorted out, at least in terms of my Superflex rankings. I think I have maybe like Jonah Coleman going to the Denver Broncos. I actually didn't hate. I thought that was kind of an interesting one. Kenyon Sadiq, he's probably somebody we could have a larger conversation on. He's somebody that I could see kind of falling into the back part of the first round. I'm not super thrilled about where he ended up. And then beyond that, I have a couple of receivers I really like. They're definitely guys that we're going to want to talk about when it comes to some of my, you know, risers and fallers. But that's probably what I'm thinking. I think gun to my head, if I had to make some sort of final decision, I guess I do kind of like the Jonah Coleman thing. I think that, you know, bringing back J.K. Dobbins, it wasn't super expensive, and he is an older guy. And we look at that backfield, and, you know, R.J. Harvey was pretty decent down the stretch for fantasy purposes because he got a ton of volume, but he was not particularly efficient on that volume. And I think having somebody that is a little bit more of a ground-based option, not so much of just the I'm a really fast guy, going to do my whole home run speed thing, is going to be good for them. So the two of them, Coleman and Harvey, I think work well as a pair. I'm willing to take that chance, especially because, you know, as we all remember, if it had not been for that untimely ankle injury, this probably would have been the AFC representative for the Super Bowl. Denver, like it's a very good offense to want to invest in. So that's probably what I'm thinking there. But I don't know. Any thoughts on Coleman specifically? Yes. I guess if you have them, but yeah,
absolutely. So it's a tough one because I think I on the surface level, he's a fourth round pick. That's just not great. Like you want to see those teams take him on day two. I'd love. There's a couple of running backs that I'm like, why couldn't you have just squeaked in to day two? Like the Singletons, the Emmett Johnsons, the Washingtons, the Colemans. But we also know, again, that the fourth round's not a death sentence. Like, Scadabo is a great example of that last year. And, and Jonah Coleman was the fourth running back off the board for what it's worth. Like, there is something to that. I wanted to read this because I went back to my 2025 scouting. And just to read off what I thought about RJ Harvey, he was my running back 12 in that process. So pretty late, wasn't a fan. Compact running back who can pack a punch, run through defenders, showing off speed. While he shows flashes of speed and agility, he struggles to maintain burst consistently. His vision is decent, but he sometimes makes poor decisions. He's a more of a change of pace back than a lead guy. There's a concern that his ability to handle a bigger workload at the next level. Now, I don't necessarily think he handled the bigger workload after Dobbins went down great. There's some stats that are working against him. I'm not going to drown you to death on those. Like, he did score some touchdowns, but clearly a good team. You know, Jonah Coleman was my running back, I believe, 4 or 5 going into this process. I believe he was running back 5 for me. I moved him up. He's definitely a guy that I'm interested in. I do think Jonah Coleman has it in him to be able to be a bell cow. I don't think that is going to be the plan with RJ Harvey there. But the team is, in my opinion, kind of missing more of that bruiser back when you look at their depth. I like what he brings to this team. We clearly know it's going to be like a good offense, which is a really big piece of this. So, Jonah Coleman's a guy that I think is more than fair to be taking at the end of that round there. What I said about him, compact, physical, trustworthy, one fumble over 400 career touches, average 5 yards per carry in 2024 between, you know, behind a bad line. He's a good pass blocker. It's just, it doesn't feel great, but I think that's just the nature of this class. It just doesn't feel great. So you have to plant your flags. You have to take guys in at the 112 or the early second that you have to keep it in the context of this class of being, it's not a reach to take a day 3 running back if you believe in the talent and you think the landing spot is okay at the end of the first. I would challenge anyone listening this to tell me that there's a locked in 112 that they absolutely feel good about at this point in time. And, you know, try to bring that argument to me. Like I'm more than willing to listen to it. So, I mean, he's definitely a guy like Antonio Williams is in that spot. Like, I think I have Jonah Coleman right now. My overall rankings is the 110. So I'm taking a day 3 running back in the first round right now, because I don't think the talent is bad and the landing spot's solid, even though the draft capital is not a big checkup. So it is the nature of this class, but I think it does present some opportunities where you can plant some flags on guys that you believe in, draft capital be damned, and see how things play out for you here in the next couple of years.
No, absolutely. This is really all about taking your swings on whatever your gut says. You know, Antonio Williams is a big riser for you. I think Jonah Coleman, for me, counts as a very big riser. For my part, he was somebody that I think I had him ranked fairly well in my RB rankings initially. But, you know, after the draft capital, the landing spot, everything, big thumbs up for me there. Is there another one that you want to get into before we take our commercial break? The people have to know about.
I would probably say Chris Bell is a guy that like probably deserves like a little bit of attention here. Like we have to talk about him at least. And I'll be honest with you. Like he's not a guy that I was really, you know, considering for a better spot here. Tape's fun. Great eval. Good size. Makes defenders looked overmatched consistently. I think for me, athleticism, he's a mean player. It's good, but I don't think the route tree is quite there yet at the NFL level. I think plenty of fun to kind of be had here. I literally put my evaluation of him. Plenty of fun to be had on day three. Joke's on me. He was a day two player. But it's the situation here, right? And I think Malik Willis is a whole different situation. We can get to that on another day. But I think he's improved enough as a passer to be adequate, and they need some weapons there. As much as they can probably throw the ball to Waddle and Achan almost 50% of the time, the ball has to go somewhere, and I think he's, you know, I think he's still recovering from that injury, so I'm not necessarily sure we're going to see him right away. But in terms of more of a dynasty play, I think there's some interest there for me. He was a guy that, you know, I had at wide receiver 12 that now, you know, he's moved up, I believe, the wide receiver 8 or 9 range that I'm starting to consider almost early to mid second. So I'd at least shout him out there because he's not really a guy that I was considering before that. I think landing spot and draft capital kind of lined up to where he had to move up a bit and need to get his name mentioned.
Oh, for sure. And I think when we look at the Dolphins and how they handled the draft, for a team that has a very, very long road to even sniffing playoff relevance again, they took some pretty interesting chances. I think somebody like Chris Bell, who had gotten some first round buzz, I had seen some people say, you know, if you squint and just, you know, warp your brain right, you could see a little bit of AJ Brown in there. I don't know if I'm really willing to go that far with it, but I do see the vision for the type of player that he could be. And even the other guys that they got, honestly, I kind of like taking a chance on any of them. Kevin Coleman Jr. was a very, very fast guy down at the Senior Bowl. He impressed me a ton in his ability to attack vertically and horizontally. I think he can do a lot of different things. And also Caleb Douglas, very, very talented guy, stood out a lot as well. And because of how barren that depth chart is, especially after moving Waddle out to Denver to get some of those picks to make some of these choices, the ball has to go somewhere, and each of these guys is probably going to have their chance to shine on what might not be a very good team. Is the best case scenario for fantasy maybe what we got out of Elik Iomanor and some of the stuff from the Tennessee Titans offense last year? I mean, maybe, but you know, to your point from earlier, Malik Willis, he's a little bit better. I think he's probably going to do better than rookie Cam Ward out there. So there is some interesting appeal with that for sure. And if you want some of my other thoughts on how the Miami Dolphins draft went or any of the other 31 teams, you can go over to ftnfantasy.com and check out my latest article, Draft Team Grades for Everybody, something to consider. Now, on the other side of our commercial break, we are going to continue our conversation about the 2026 NFL draft. Folks, please don't go anywhere. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast.
Hey everyone, C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes Podcast. Watching sports is a very fun thing to do all by itself, but sometimes it can be even better when you have a little bit more on the line than just your regular rooting interest, if you know what I mean. But if you don't live in a state that has a sports book, how are you supposed to get in on all the action? Well, thanks to our friends at Novig, America's number one sports prediction market, people in over 35 states now have unprecedented access to all of the hottest plays around the world of sports. And better yet, if you sign up and make a minimum $5 purchase with code FTN at checkout, not only will you get to join in on all the Novig fun, but we will email you a promo code for a free month of a GOAT subscription for free. That's right, unlock our top flight subscription that gets you all of our premium content, betting models, and expert picks across the world of sports. you've ever wondered what an FTN GOAT subscription would be like, this is a great way to find out. So all you got to do is go to Novig.us or download the Novig app. Give them all the information they're looking for, make a minimum $5 purchase, but make sure to include that code FTN at checkout to get in on the Novig fun and unlock a free month of our GOAT tier subscription for free for an entire month. Seems like a pretty good time if you ask me. So go ahead and sign up for Novig, America's number one sports prediction market.
There it is, folks. We are back from our commercial break. This is still the Crossing Routes podcast. I'm still Herms. He is still Tyler O. And we are still talking about the fallout for fantasy football from the 2026 NFL draft. Lots of wild stuff going on. A lot of players moving up and down the rankings now that we have some landing spots. And, you know, to sort of continue our conversation, you know, one of the guys that really rose for me, I guess I'm going to lump these two guys together just because they're both receivers. They both got pretty good draft capital. I think a little bit earlier than a lot of people were expecting. The first one I want to talk about, Zachariah Branch, the Atlanta Falcons. He is small. He is a very tiny guy. I think I don't even know if he's officially 5'10", but what I do know is that he is one of the fastest people on planet Earth. If you could just go look at his 40 time, absolutely nuts. He was a baller at USC. He was a baller when he transferred to Georgia, and he's a guy that I've been aware of long enough that I think he's probably going to have some fun, especially being in Atlanta, Kevin Stefanski coming in. Not that this really matters a ton, but because I'm a nerd, whenever I play Madden, I like to use the Kevin Stefanski playbook. It's fun. It's a nice system. And just thinking about Zachariah Branch, probably running predominantly out of the slot, attacking from that part of the field, I think there could be some interesting opportunity for him. I think what he does blends really well with sort of the larger bodied experience that you get out of a Drake London and with tight end Kyle Pitts. So that sort of mismatch, I think it's going to be pretty fruitful. I think that the sneaky PPR upside with Branch is totally on the table. And then the other one, just because I have to do it, it's Malachi Fields, man. He did the thing. He got the draft capital. He went to a place to play with our best friend, Jackson Dart, in back-to-back years. Some of the people that I got to hang out with down in Mobile that I thought were really nice are now going to get to play with each other. And it's a great opportunity for Fields, because when you look at that roster, other than Malik Nabers, I mean, yeah, they went out and signed Calvin Austin this offseason. They made a couple other moves, but the Giants still really needed to do a little bit more than just giving that huge bag to Isaiah Likely. Fields, the combine stuff, it didn't really matter. Everybody was losing their mind. Oh, he's slow. It's not going to matter. Blah, blah, blah. He still went in the third round of the NFL draft, folks. It worked, and I am sticking to it. I, just for, you know, sake of transparency in the conversation we're having, Zachariah Branch, I moved up all the way to my wide receiver 6, and I have Fields at my wide receiver 7. How you feeling about those guys? Do you think those are spicy rankings, or do I need to calm down a little bit?
I mean, I do think they're a little spicy, but I feel like we're also at that point in time we can go any way you want to around it. I think I have those guys at 10 and 11 right now, so you're a little higher than me. I think, you know, a couple guys that I like pre-processed that got similar draft capital, you know, Jacoby Lane, Jeremy Bernard, who's hopefully going to be your boy here soon, Chris Bell, who I brought up, Antonio Williams. So a little more aggressive than me, but it's the nature of the class where I don't necessarily dock you for it. I've always been pretty skeptical about Zachariah Branch. Like, going into this process, he was wide receiver 13 for me, so that was pretty low compared to everybody. Yeah, I mean, he was always going to get that capital. Like, I'm not surprised he went in the third round. That was kind of the expectation. But for me, he relied so heavily on manufactured touches, and the route tree needed like serious development. You know, I think like his body language and the ball wasn't coming his way is something that NFL coaches don't forget. I think the opportunity is there. I'm probably a little more bullish on the quarterback situation there than most. But we'll see where it goes. Like, certainly you have no problem clicking his name. You know, I'd say like end of the second. I feel that same way about Malachi Fields, where I do like Malachi Fields. I love where he landed. Sleeper in the class for me, big frame, physical after the catch, but there's some limitations, you know, with the routes and the speed. So we'll see if they can learn how to use them. But I think he's definitely a guy that Jackson Dart could just throw the ball up to, and he's going to come down with it probably a little bit over half the time. So those are certainly two guys that I have some interest in. Don't have them ranked as high, but they're in that range of wide receivers where, you know, why not? You know, they got the draft capital. The situation's not bad. There's not a lot in front of them. They could really end up being the wide receiver too. A lot of opportunities there for them to be wide receiver two on those teams. So, hey, could happen.
You never know. You never know. Are there any other risers for you? Or if you have any guys that maybe went to a nightmare spot that ended up falling in your rankings, definitely curious to hear about some of those.
I want to address before I get into that is I stayed true pre and post to keeping Jordan Tyson as my wide receiver one overall. Carnell Tate stays at 2 and Mekhi Lemon stays at 3. That was consistent. Nothing changed after the draft. In terms of fallers, Elijah Surratt was a player that I liked a decent amount that I think is definitely a faller at this point in time. He went to the Ravens, you know, not necessarily the heaviest passing team in the world. And he went in the fourth round. So that's definitely a guy that I dropped a couple ticks there. He was a big faller for me. If there was another guy that I wanted to talk about as a faller, unfortunately, Emma Johnson. That's got to be a guy that I was a fan of his game, thought he could kind of do it all. Ends up as a day three pick, sitting behind Walker. So that was a bit of a bummer for me to see him fall there. I would say those are the two that kind of stick out to me the most of guys I was kind of in on in the pre-draft process, but have kind of cooled off on now that the draft capital kind of didn't come through. Did you see any shifts there from those two guys for you, or how are you handling the lack of draft capital between Emmett Johnson and Elijah Surratt?
Yeah, I mean, with Surratt, the landing spot is probably a lot better for their real life offense for the Baltimore Ravens than it's going to be for fantasy. I think he serves a functional purpose for Lamar Jackson, but probably not something we're going to be super enthusiastic about. But with Johnson, and honestly, just a commentary on all of the running backs, I think we could say they're all pretty big ballers. Johnson is somebody that, you know, admittedly I was not the biggest fan of in the world, but I definitely saw the vision. I saw the ability to be a pass catcher. I saw the potential utility as a sort of change of pace back. And I guess the good thing going to Kansas City is that Ken Walker is not necessarily a big pass catcher. I guess there's technically some opportunity for Johnson to do something, but we're definitely trying to squint and make fetch happen there as far as that goes. He is somebody that I really thought was going to go at least a little bit higher than he did. Unfortunately, did not work out. I think the same can kind of be said about my man Mike Washington, though. That was the big one. For me, over the course of time, I had talked myself into, you know, it's either him or Jadarian Price as my RB2. I flip-flopped them. I ended up with Washington ultimately. But not only did he fall out of day two, but he landed behind the sixth overall pick from last year's draft, who got nearly 20 touches a game. I think the only prayer he really has is if Clint Kubiak, coming over from being the offensive coordinator with Seattle, actually decides to deploy a bit of a committee, maybe we could have some appeal there, but I don't know. That's a lot of big ifs. It would make drafting Ashton Jeanty in the first place kind of pointless if you're the Raiders. I have tons more thoughts on how the Raiders did with this draft. But, yeah, I mean, those are probably just – honestly, the running backs in general, really, really big issue for me. Are there any of them that you like? There are two names in specific that I think are actually kind of appealing after everything shook out. But for you, here's probably the better question. How many running backs do you think are actually worth drafting in a 3-round rookie draft?
I mean, Nick Singleton is a guy that I'm probably going to stay pretty high on. Like, I've always been a big fan of the talent. You know, things didn't shake out the way they should have than the foot injury. But I do think that there's, like, you know, I've seen him in college, and I know that there's been times when people were like, this is a star NFL running back here. He's got the whole package. It didn't turn out like that. But I also think there's opportunity there to emerge. Maybe not this year, but I do think that there's a world when he can kind of take over. DeMond Claiborne. The Vikings, we talked about this a little bit. Like, Aaron Jones ain't getting any younger, and Jordan Mason's just a guy. Now, DeMond Claiborne is not necessarily a world beater over here, but proved to have the speed. Could be a one-for-one replacement for Aaron Jones if things kind of work out there. And we've seen Aaron Jones be a bell cow. So that was definitely like, you know, another guy that I have some interest in. Catron Allen, another guy where I'm yes, not as bullish here, but I mean, it's like, he's going to fight JCM for snaps. And I do think that there's been times when I think he's better here. The room gets better. I think an overall winner, of that one there, in my opinion, was probably going to be Rashad White. Because JCM and Catron Allen aren't taking any pass work from Rashad White. So, like, that was cool for him. And then I would say that, I mean, Emmett's, you know, I would say Mike Washington, Emmett Johnson, both guys I'd like to draft. I mean, Adam Randall gets interesting. I wasn't a huge fan of his, but, like, the idea of having, like, a big physical running back behind Henry as his bell cow kind of sounds interesting. I mean, Randall's 6'3", 232. Big boy. You might even mistake him for Derrick Henry at times when he gets some run. So I think I just named pretty much all the guys that I have some interest in. You know, my boy Eli Heidenreich, who I just, you know, through the process found out is like everyone's boy, was drafted, which was cool. Stays home. Not sure how much he's going to play, but if they use him as like a pass catching running back, like I think there's some opportunity there. And I think that's about the start and the end of it from the running back position. I mean, if you were hurting and need a running back this draft and you don't get Jeremiah Love over Jadarian Price. And dang it, Herms, I didn't even mention Kalon Black. I mean, this guy.
Yes.
Oh, God, man. It's like I'm interested, but I'm not interested. I've seen the Niners take so many running backs in day two that have turned out to be absolutely nothing that I think I'm ready to just let someone else draft him. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's where I'm at.
So I know it's the meme from Arrested Development. You know, the whole, these people delude themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And it never works. But I think it might work for us. And I honestly, I kind of talked myself into it a little bit with Kalon Black, if only because he lands in a place that could really use a sort of change up to Christian McCaffrey. And when I watched Kalon Black down at the Senior Bowl, there were definitely some deficiencies. There were some concerns that I had in terms of the overall well-roundedness of his game. But the one thing that I can definitively say, and I put this in my article for the draft grades as well, when it came to just seeing a hole, hitting a hole, and just sprinting at top speed and just running away from dudes, Kalon Black was the man. He was an absolute nightmare to try and catch up to. And I think working in that sort of outside zone, kind of give him a little bit of space to just do his thing, I see it. Unlike some of these other Niners draft picks in years past, like I didn't, because here's the thing, like I didn't know who Tyrion Davis Price was before they drafted him.
Yeah.
I didn't know who some of these other guys
were. Yes,
but like, at least with Kalon Black, he was a known commodity on like the national championship winning football team. Like he was a legit name. He was somebody that people at least considered before this. So I'm willing to give it a chance. He actually ended up moving up to being my RB5, which, you know, in this class, not really, you know, much
it's
of an
accomplishment, though.
But
it's
like,
fair.
Yeah. And I'm willing to do it, but I guess that's one of the ones where I'm nervous to plant my flag too much because I know that the risks are pretty abundant. I feel the same way, honestly, about Ted Hurst going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where it's like, dude, like if he hits and he ends up with that ceiling being the thing, it's going to be an incredible pick. But if I had to put like a ballpark percentage on the odds of that happening, I'd give it maybe 10-15%. Like he was raw, dude. Playing in the Sun Belt Conference at Georgia State did him absolutely no favors to be prepared for those Senior Bowl practices, let alone for the NFL. I think it's kind of ballsy, but we'll have to see about that. But like with some of these dudes, you do have to take some swings and take some chances. And like, I'm willing to do that with Kalon Black. But I do actually, before, because we're going to have to get out of here pretty soon. It's been a great episode, though. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I do want to talk about the quarterbacks who aren't Fernando Mendoza. because there are enough ones that have some sort of relevance that it's probably worth bringing up. So like Mendoza, he's probably your 102. I don't think anything has really changed that. Ty Simpson, wherever you want to take him, I am curious to see where you would, you know, sort of value him. But the big thing I'm curious about, because anybody who listens to this podcast knows what my answer is going to be. But if you're taking a chance on either Carson Beck landing with the Arizona Cardinals, not really anything besides Jacoby Brissett stopping him, or Drew Aller going to my beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, who would you roll the dice on, and how high in a rookie draft would you take either of them?
So I currently have Carson Beck ahead of Drew Aller. I don't feel good about it, but that's the way I have it, I guess. I don't know. I think they're both underwhelming, but I both think they're going to get, they're both landed in a spot where they're day two and there's going to be opportunity there for them. I worry about Drew Aller from a prospect, from an idea, not prospect, from the idea of, you know, how he gets it done, you know, between the ears. Right. And we know he has the physical tools, but damn, man, there's just times he looked absolutely lost and I can't get that out of my head. Carson Beck, I think, to me is just like mid. There's like nothing about his game that I think is like exceptional, but I think like, could he be better than Jacoby Brissett? Maybe. Drew Aller, I think, could just flop. So like, I mean, maybe the ceiling's higher on Drew, but like right now I got it. Carson Beck, right now I got it. You know, Drew Aller, obviously these guys are, you know, we're not touching them in any type of like one QB leagues, but like shifting over, checking out my super flex ranks. You know, where did I put these guys? I put them like top of the third, kind of that 2-3 turn. And that's where I stand right now. I don't really think there's too much there. I don't take the Cade Klubnik in the fourth round to the Jets very seriously. And I don't think there's really anything else that we need to talk about besides Garrett Nussmeier, who I had a little bit of hope for, is now off the board.
Yeah, I definitely feel you. And I think if we're looking at it just from like the likelihood of which one hits, you know, is higher, it's probably Carson Beck. But like, for me, again, I'm not going to go too long because I'm a Steelers fan. Everybody, of course, I'm going to pick Drew Aller. But just the fact that like if it works, and because it's such a late pick that you're spending on either of these guys anyway, I would rather just take the biggest home run shot. That's kind of just my thing. And plus, like, at least, you know, Aaron Rodgers is probably coming back. So I don't really worry about Aller getting in there too quickly. But, you know, for all the reasons that you discussed and for a lot of the reasons that we've discussed in past episodes, it's like, who knows if that's going to work out. But you did bring up Garrett Nussmeier's name. He is somebody that I think still kind of warrants talking about just because of where he went. But were you surprised at just how far he ended up falling? Because like, I knew there was the knee, people were a little bit concerned. He wasn't my favorite at the Senior Bowl, but like he's an experienced quarterback. He knows what he's doing. His father is the offensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints. He knows football. There are things going for Garrett Nussmeier. How much appeal do you think he holds now?
None.
Oh no.
None. Dude, I mean, the NFL has spoken. We were trying to figure it out, what, how they're going to feel about things. And he went from being talked about a number one pick overall to being the seventh round pick behind a quarterback who's probably got another solid like 8 years left in the league. There's really no hope here. I'm not even putting him on a taxi squad, man. I mean, we have Baron Morton and Athan Kalia Kamanis. Oh, yeah. Pronouncing there. both going before him. Man, I'm not interested in Nussmeier. I'm not. I think it's a waste of a taxi squad spot, man. That's where I stand.
I guess I get, my only logic was maybe because if he ends up just being the backup to Patrick Mahomes, there's some value to that. If he ever gets hurt again, you at least have the guy who's playing quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. But even then, I'm not thinking somebody that you necessarily have to, like, if you at the end of like the fourth round or something, and you just completely give up on not knowing what to do, then like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You could consider Nussmeier at that point, but I don't know. The appeal's definitely not massive. I just think, like, if there is any value to taking eventual backup quarterbacks that are attached to good offenses, maybe there's something. But yeah, beyond that, nothing super crazy. Any other final notes or anything about some of the tight ends that you want to, you know, throw out there before we get out of here?
I mean, tight end's really interesting this year because, like, I don't really know how to think about it because there's a certain kind of tight end besides the Deacon Stowers, who I'm good with. The NFL seemed to make a stance and saying, like, hey, we're more interested in blocking tight ends that can be on the field more often, and we're going to run heavier sets. And, like, I think it kind of speaks to, like, an overall just shift in how offenses are going to line up and how they're going to approach. It's like they're going to be in heavier sets. They're going to throw in heavier sets. They're probably going to run in heavier sets. And the idea here is, like, you put up heavier sets, they have to match it with a heavier defense, and then you throw the ball and you create mismatches. I think that's kind of the short and sweet kind of way of talking about it. So there's certainly guys that it's like we saw a Nate Bokerker, you know, Marlon Klein. These are guys that went in the earliest, you know, in the second early day two that I didn't even have on my radar because they didn't do anything in college in terms of production. But the draft capital would suggest that there is room for them on the football field. So how do you approach that? As a fantasy drafter, like, they're going to get snaps, are going to be out there, but are they going to get fantasy points? I don't know. I think it's, you know, Max Clair. I like that. You know, he was my tight end three, stays as my tight end three, goes to LA, where I think there's, you know, we did see Terrence Ferguson just go there, but, like, there's opportunity there as well. But, you know, I was a big fan of Justin Jolie. You know, he went fifth in the fifth round. He dropped pretty far. But there is opportunity there on the Broncos. I don't know. I don't really know how to handle. Like, I had to literally add names. Matthew Hibner, Will Kaczmarek, even Marlon Klein and Nate Bokerker. I mean, these are guys that were not in my top 10 that I had to throw into my rankings here and kind of rethink about how I, you know, for me, it's like I would always rank tight ends who were pass-catching tight ends because that's what you want in fantasy. But that is just not what the NFL valued this draft. They go ahead and take those blockers. So I don't know what I'm going to do with these guys. Basically, like, not as interested in pretty much any of these names in the first two rounds besides Stowers and Sadiq. But we'll – and Claire, I should say. But it's we'll see how things kind of play out here. Because even Sam Roush, who I thought was decent, is now – you know, I think he's behind Cole Kmet and Loveland. So – I don't know. What do you think about how this was kind of a crazy one for me when I saw these names coming off on the second round? I was bewildered, Herms. I mean, how are you handling this like crazy tight end run and shifts, I guess, in some ways this draft?
Yeah, I mean, I Jaguars general manager, I think his name James Gladstone, I believe is his name, if I remember correctly. He was giving some interview. I saw a little clip of it, and they were talking about the Nate Bokerker pick and just kind of digging into like why they did that. And it was very emblematic of a lot of what you had mentioned. The league is really trending toward getting as many of those tight ends out there as possible to be able to create some of those mismatches and open things up for other people. And that means that there's going to be a guy who's going to get a lot of playing time, is probably not going to catch the ball a lot, who's going to be important for the offense still. So they will matter for fantasy, but in like a tangential way. So like, that's really the big challenge. And I guess I would just kind of, I would ask people to, you know, seek out that quote, kind of absorb that and kind of keep that in mind when you see some of these names. I still think it's worth exploring the guys who are a little bit more in that catch first mold. The fact that I had jokingly referred to Justin Jolie as "we have Evan Engram at home" the entire time, and then him going to Denver is the best thing that could have possibly happened. I'm deeply amused and very still interested in him just because, I don't know, what did Engram do last year? Like, why not, if they were so interested in him in the first place, just get a younger version of him and try and do similar things? I think the chance is at least still there. But I don't know. With some of those names like Klein and Bokerker and some of these dudes like that, they're fine, I guess. The appeal that I really see outside of Stowers and Sadiq is, you know, Jolie, like I said, Max Clair, just because, I mean, Sean McVay has his, you know, 15th tight end in the room now. That's going to be a little bit annoying. But, you know, you look at some of those dudes like Colby Parkinson, and some of those other guys that he ended up throwing out there a lot. I mean, they're like on the older end. So, I mean, who knows? It's at least still possible that Max Clair could do kind of something. But the other name that I thought, I guess, was kind of interesting to, you know, have a nice little bow that we can wrap on this. Eli Raridan out of Notre Dame ended up going to the New England Patriots within the top 100 picks of the draft. He's somebody that the homie Max Toscano, he is the big tight end guy, does a lot of work over at Perception, very smart person, film background, really loves doing tight end stuff, especially. That was his guy. I didn't really know too much about Raridan, to be honest. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that, like, I came to that conclusion on my own. But just, you know, in hearing different conversations from other people who know a lot more of that stuff than I do, and then watching that exact player go out and get really good draft capital, I'm kind of interested, especially because the only real obstacle in his way is Hunter Henry, a favorite of ours. Hunter in the hen house is one of the best things that possibly happens on Sundays throughout the fall season. But he's older. There's the time limit on that is certainly, you know, getting up there. So I'm at least interested in taking that chance. Do you have any interest in him at all?
I jammed him in the back of my tight end rankings before the draft started. I think he showed some promise, but he was just always kind of injured, so I didn't have a ton to go off of. But man, I'm here for it. Like, Drake May is the future. Hunter Henry's aging out. I think he's exactly the kind of player I want to stash on my taxi squad to see how this kind of rolls out for sure. So fairly excited for that, especially because he did get pretty solid capital there. Did go in, you know, the third round, day three. And you know, that I feel like the Patriots have taken a lot of tight ends over the years, and like, no one's really threatened Hunter Henry at all. So why not have a shot? See how it goes. I mean, Hunter Henry's 31. He's only got 1 year left on his contract. I'm not expecting anything out of Raridan in year one. So toss him on the practice squad and maybe things work out. So I think he can catch the ball and he can block. So there's some upside here.
That's what it's all about, folks. Upside. You just have to shoot for the upside with the 2026 rookie class. It's all we can do. It's all we can do. I hope everybody out there has a wonderful time with their rookie drafts. Best of luck trading out of the picks if you possibly can. But if you end up being stuck, consider some of the names that we talked about on today's episode of the Crossing Routes podcast. We will be back next week to talk about something related to fantasy football. But until then, I'm Herms, he is Tyler O, and we are saying goodbye.
Think about it before we go, just to say goodbye. And stay. See you.